ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Cobos in Edo, presented by Corona Premier.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham, it is Brian behind the glass, and it's a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's a St. Patrick's edition of the Killer Bees. It's a St. Brackets. I like to take a little bit more in that latter one. But we're also at Cobos Q. There's no better place to be on a St. Patrick's Day, a St. Brackets Day, on a beautiful Monday. Look at this weather. This weather's outstanding.
Phenomenal.
Get on out here to Cobos Q. Have a drink. Have a bite. Great spot to have a bite. Just a great spot to hang out. So swing on by to Cobos. We'll be here until 6 o'clock. Raul would love to have you. It'll be a fantastic time to be had for all. I know you like being here, Blankers.
I love it here. Raul is like family, and it's a great story, too, to how they've gotten to this point. And now the talk today when he was on with John and on with Paul about expanding is fantastic because they're kind of getting screwed by this 45 expansion project. But coming from, like, literally making food out of his house, people expect and they kind of assume that this is a sports bar. And that's where he said he kind of almost went wrong. He loves sports so much that he kind of tried to facilitate sports bar first. But the food is second to none. I mean, this is not bar food by any stretch of the imagination. And now he's going to really show that up even more. But the food has always been why anybody should go to Cobos Q.
Yeah, it's outstanding. And we have the brackets out as well. Houston, a one seed. Third year in a row that Houston is a one seed. It's their fourth straight year to win 30 games. It's pretty remarkable what Kelvin Sampson has done. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Houston Cougar. Now, I am proud about it.
Yep,
I am puffing my chest out a little bit more because of it. But what a remarkable run it has been. One seed. What were your thoughts when you saw the brackets revealed? As far as the Cougars are concerned, what did you see from their perspective?
The big thing to me is I think it's a very winnable bracket. I think that they deserve the one seed. I think I brought this up to you, and I know we had started that dialogue about 3-4 weeks ago about whether the one was important or not. But I thought that at that point when they were on the two line, I thought that they could get to the one, and I was so happy that they got to the one. Again, they lose Juwan, but they found a way to get, you know, to win another champion, to win the championship and do something. And I thought it was really interesting that LJ was talking about it after the semifinal win about we've got motivation because it's something we haven't done yet. We won the regular season 2 years in a row, but we lost the tournament, got blown out last year. We want to do that. And the fact that they were able to go do that in a very good, very tight, very, very, you know, hotly contested game was just another feather in the cap of what continues to be the legacy of Kelvin Sampson at U of H. I was going to bring it up to you and put it on Bad Take Boulevard a week or so ago. There was a guy that said that they should just name the court for Kelvin Sampson now. And I was like, timeout. Guy V and his three Final Fours, his name's already on the court. But they really, we are in the neighborhood now of thinking about what you're going to do to honor the legacy of Kelvin Sampson. Because we talk about the golden era of Astros baseball.
Yeah.
This is truly another golden era of U of H basketball.
Build the statue. Why not?
No doubt.
Just build the statue.
Doubt.
I'd be all in for the statue. You know, I didn't really care a whole lot about, like, I want them to win every game that they play,
sure,
right? But my prevailing interest was to get through it healthy, and they don't. Juwan Roberts gets hurt. But Juwan mentioned, you know, yesterday and even in the whenever we were in Kansas City that he's going to be good to go for the NCAA tournament. But as soon as we got there Saturday, I was like, yeah, you know, this would be kind of nice to sweep this bad boy. This would be kind of nice to win this thing. And the dominance they had over the Big 12 was pretty crazy. They won the Big 12 by four games. Four games in the Big 12. They win the Big 12 tournament. They win both of the trophies. Just the second year in the league. Didn't lose a road game. Longest road streak. It's the only time ever that it's a road winning streak record. And it's also the 19 wins in Big 12 play. Now, they did add 20 games this year for the first time in, like, forever. And they're actually going back to 18 next year, so it might be a record that stands for a while. But 19-1. Like, people ask me during the year what would win the Big 12 title when I do these hits and stuff. I was like, yeah, I think 15-5 would win it. It took 19 games. 19 games is what they won. It's nuts.
And, you know, you look at all the different things accomplished, but with the exception of the fact that the SEC has just had an unbelievable year in basketball, but for the most part, even last year, your first year in the conference, and you're talking about a stacked and racked, loaded conference for basketball, and they win it. And now they come back and do it again, and I think it would be getting and garnering even more attention – if the SEC didn't have the year that they've had, getting all the teams they got in. But still, nonetheless, Kelvin just keeps on. And the great thing is, as I always mention, is because in today's day and age of NIL and everybody catering to all these players, the fact that he can come in and say, if you don't like to be coached up, if you don't like tough love, then don't play for me. And yet he's still getting top five recruiting classes, and he continues to get everything out of his players. And when you talk to his players, it's not like, I can't wait to get out of here and go to the NBA or do this or that. They know they're getting life lessons, basketball lessons, and they're getting better as people and as players. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, these players are signing up for it.
Yes.
And they want it because they know it gives them a better chance of being a really good pro. Like, Quentin Grimes is killing it right now in Philadelphia. Silly trade by the Mavs. That was the worst trade they made
this
season.
The revenge game the other
night,
too.
Killing it right now.
Yeah, he goes against the team that traded him away in Dallas and goes for, like, 29.
Yeah, he's going nuts. He had, like, a 40-point game the other day, didn't he, or close to 40? I think he hit 40. Marcus Sasser, like, he was a first-round draft pick, is playing, you know, doing things in the league. Jamal Shedd, second-rounder, but is getting minutes as a second-round rookie. Like, these players, Jairus Walker, a lottery pick. These recruits know the development they get when they go to the University of Houston. Samson doesn't hide, you know, the fact of what it's going to be like. And they crave it. They want it. They want to be coached because they want to get better. And they know that it's their best chance to make it as a professional. And he's proven that time and time again.
And then it's like Jamal Shedd. Because Jamal Shedd, people were a little unsure going into his last year at U of H. Like, is he an NBA player? Not only does, you know, is he up for winning the National Player of the Year award, but he's showing everything now when he gets a chance to play in the NBA that he's a legit NBA player. And Fran Fraschilla, you were on the air. Fran Fraschilla started talking about it at the end of the game, the other the championship game, about the fact that Kelvin handpicks his players. And when he gets guys, you can't predict, like, when they're going to actually blossom to the peak. But, like, Uzan has now become a guy that's going to be an NBA prospect because of what he's done since he got midway point and beyond in this season. And the way he played in the tournament, you're just like, you have to take notice of a kid that can play on the next level.
Yeah, that's who I was going to bring up, is that point. Like, Milo's, his development from where he was this time last year to where he's at now, he's turned into an NBA prospect, like you mentioned. He wasn't, like, he'd always been on the NBA radar. But if you looked at any mock draft last year and you could use everybody, he wouldn't have been on it. This year, like, he's starting to get some buzz. And if he had a really good Big 12 tournament, obviously a really good title game. And he went off for 25 against Arizona, but he's now becoming that guy. Don't you love this music, by the way?
I do.
I just love this music. It feels like I love this time of year. Yes, I'm biased. But this is my favorite sporting event, really, all season long. And, like, there's a lot of good ones. Super Bowl, really good, but that's more about, like, the ending of a fantastic NFL year. College football's gotten better in my mind because you had the playoff now. I used to hate the national championship game or the semifinal because it didn't really invite everybody. I'm a bigger fan of it now. I like golf. Like, the Masters are really cool. But this is my favorite sporting event of the season. So this music is nostalgic for me. I really like it.
It's just because anything can happen, right? We've seen some of the most iconic things happen in sports, happen in this tournament. From the Leitner shot to the unfortunate, when you're talking about him here, but like the Villanovas, the NC States, the you know, complete underdogs that go all the way and run the table. We've seen so many different things that people will remember for the rest of their lives coming out of March Madness, that it has just become this massive event that everybody wants to see and be a part of. And now with the brackets and everything like that, now everybody partakes even more. But it's just a phenomenal time to be dialed into college basketball and all the excitement. And, like, those first 2 days, that first Thursday, Friday, where it's morning, noon, and night, that's unreal.
Yeah, let's talk about those brackets, because obviously the Cougs had an unbelievable dominant season. But, and look, I'm not picking against them in the second round. Obviously, we're assuming victory in the first round, very much assuming. But I didn't think they did any favors there with Gonzaga as an 8 seed. I thought Gonzaga was rated a little bit lower than they should have. I mean, 9-1 in their last 10. KenPom, for whatever that's worth, has them as a top 9 team in the nation. It feels like a tougher draw in the 1-8 matchup potentially in the second round than Houston should have gotten.
I think that they're all tough draws, quite frankly. Now, the KenPom, the fact that Gonzaga is number 9 and they've been to 9 straight Sweet 16s, like, I am aware of that. Georgia also has, I don't know how to pronounce it, Aza Newell, I think, who is a top 5 pick in this upcoming NBA draft, talented freshman. So, yeah, that's a tough matchup. But you look at all these 8-9s, like, which one of these are not tough matchups? Florida could potentially get UConn, who's the back-to-back defending champion, who's capable of beating you. Oklahoma has a really good freshman. You look at Auburn's 8-9. Louisville, who I thought was underseeded as an 8. I expected them to be like a 6 seed. They were an 8 seed. Duke gets Mississippi State Baylor, which you can say what you want there. VJ Edgecombe's very good at Baylor. Yeah. I love Norchad Omir, one of my favorite players in college basketball. Now, Baylor is a little bit undermanned because they've had a ton of injuries. If they were at full health, look out. Mississippi State comes from the SEC. The SEC was the best conference in basketball this year. So I don't disagree with your point, Brian, but I think that all of these 8-9s are very tough. In fact, the committee was weird. Like, there's been a lot of drama about North Carolina, West Virginia. We'll certainly get into that. Yep. I thought the weirdest seed was Memphis. Like, I expected Memphis to be on the 7-8 line, and all of a sudden they pop up as a 5. And I believe I heard, and I'll double-check this, that they're the only top seed, like a better seed, 5-12 matchup, that is a Vegas underdog. And they're a 5 seed playing the 12 seed, and that's a popular upset spot. But you don't see 12 seeds favored over 5s very often.
No, and this might be Penny Hardaway's best team like since he's been at Memphis.
Not talented, but I agree with you in the sense that like they play the best.
Right. They actually play as a team, and he's getting the most out of everybody instead of them all looking for NBA contracts to show out what they can do. But, yeah, it's weird. I mean, look, and then you still get the blue blood. You get Calipari with Arkansas against Kansas. That's an unbelievable matchup. The winner could get Patino at St. John's, I believe. That's going to be a crazy matchup. So there's a lot of drama that goes into all of this, but the storylines abound across all the matchups.
Yeah, Memphis does have an injury to their point guard. That's something that is a factor probably with Colorado State being favored. But Colorado State's the only lesser seed in the first round of the tournament that is a favorite. All the other ones, it's chalky. It's chalky. And usually you don't see that. Like,
right.
You'll see a 9 seed as a favorite. You'll see a 10 seed as a favorite. But I thought the Memphis as a 5 seed was pretty interesting. Now, the biggest controversy, it comes with the final pick. North Carolina and Bubba Cunningham's, who the North Carolina AD, who was also the tournament chair, which, talk about a conflict of interest.
Yes.
And he had his right-hand man going on all these shows, like the CBS show, the ESPN show afterwards, where they're like, hey, we can't ask Bubba Cunningham about North Carolina, so we have to ask his right-hand man. But, like, he would leave the room anytime North Carolina came up. But he's in the room whenever they're talking about all these other bubble teams. It makes zero sense. It makes no sense at all. Here was Bubba Cunningham talking to the media, one of these TV shows afterwards, where they selected North Carolina as the final team in.
The injury to DeVries is one of the factors. Player availability is one of the things that we take a look at. And they had a few great wins early in the year when he was eligible. He had a great year all year long. They did, even without him. But ultimately, when the final decision came by the committee and the voting was done, they were just on the outside looking in. And it's really disappointing for any team that doesn't make the field. And, West Virginia, Indiana, Ohio State, Boise State, those were the four teams that didn't make it. Carolina wasn't in until the Memphis win and ended up being the extra team in.
That was Bubba Cunningham. Appreciate you, Bubba. Now, the points he brings up is interesting. First off, he received a six-figure bonus, by the way, for North Carolina making the tournament. It's in his contract that he gets an extra month's pay if they make the tournament, which is six figures. So that's kind of interesting in that sense. He brings up West Virginia being down DeVries, who's the player's son, or the coach's son, who's very good. Tucker DeVries would have been one of their best two players. Javon Small, Tucker DeVries. Small was still very good. DeVries missed most of the year. You know how many games? Like, you heard Bubba Cunningham say that, right?
Right.
Like, they didn't have Tucker DeVries, so they weren't, we have to take that in consideration. Do you know how many games Tucker DeVries has played this year?
Six.
Tucker DeVries played eight games. He played eight games. He hasn't played a basketball game since December 6th. So, like, what are we doing here? This isn't Kenyon Martin getting hurt in their conference tournament.
Right.
This guy hasn't played in 2025. The last time he played was in December of 2024. So, like, that logic makes absolutely zero sense. I don't know if we heard it here with Bubba Cunningham or if it was another clip, but Bubba Cunningham, again, North Carolina AD and NCAA tournament chair, he cited the Torvik, which is a computer model. North Carolina was 36th. West Virginia was 34th. West Virginia was better there. He also cited the WAB, which is wins above the bubble. North Carolina was 42. West Virginia was 41. So, like, where are your points here? All the points that you're bringing up cite West Virginia over North Carolina.
And the biggest thing to me is, especially West Virginia playing in a very, very tough conference, is the fact that Carolina was like 1-11 in quad one games. They won one quad one game the entire year.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to live on your resume of playing when you're playing against other like-minded teams, likability teams that look like they're going to be tournament teams. When you go one and whatever it is, and it's double digits in quad one games, you don't deserve to be in the tournament. And it just looks, it gets more mucked up every time you see that he is the AD at Carolina, that he gets a bonus, that he, you know, that he wasn't in the room, but then he's able to make comments about his, the team getting in that he's the athletic director for. It's a horrible look. West Virginia earned a spot in this tournament, and it's a shame that they're not going
to
get in.
Now, West Virginia didn't do itself any favors by losing to Colorado in the Big 12 tournament. Like, if they beat Colorado and then they lose to Houston in the quarterfinals, they're probably in right now. So that didn't help their cause. But the Q1 that you're talking about, North Carolina was 1-12.
There you go.
West Virginia was 6-10.
See, that's
so, like, five more Q1 victories. That's a lot. Like, that's substantial. It's not 6-5 or something crazy like that. They cite the DeVries injury. Hasn't played in this calendar year. They cite the Torvac or whatever. West Virginia is better. They cite the wins above the bubble. West Virginia is better. It's crazy. Now, West Virginia has lawyered up, which is this is the rumor here I heard on, well, it's like on Twitter. I didn't hear this. I read this on Twitter. There is a rumor that the NCAA told the selection committee to leave West Virginia out because West Virginia sued the NCAA in 2023 about multi-time transfers. I don't believe that rumor. That is out there. And the guy, the politician who led that lawsuit against the NCAA in 2023, in which he won, was a politician named Patrick Morosi.
Yep.
Patrick Morosi is going to sue the NCAA again for leaving West Virginia
as
the
governor.
NCAA tournament. He's the governor
he
now.
He was the lieutenant governor previously or something like that. But now he's the governor of the entire state, and he's already fired up to go at the NCAA. So, you know, you can say that there's the tit-for-tat factor of whatever else might be going into this. I just think, if nothing else, on the quad one wins alone and the resume, I think West Virginia deserves to be in. I don't believe Carolina deserves to be in. Look, Carolina, even if they find a way to push that game to overtime against Duke, Duke's playing without two of their key players, including Cooper Flagg. And so you're not going to tell me that that was a big Q1 win. That was a win, right? And they got one, and they were supposed to win that game. They didn't, and they found a way to lose that game in regulation. It just, to me, doesn't make any sense how Carolina's in this tournament.
Yeah, I thought it was criminal. And you know who's kind of, like, happy that this is all going on? Because we're not talking about them. Bingo.
Yep.
We're not talking about – and look, were they worthy? Probably worth the conversation. But how many times have you heard a peep about Texas being in and not – you know, being the team that should have been snubbed. You're hearing nothing about it. Now, they helped themselves out. They beat A&M, which cost me PTO day. I'm not too happy about Texas.
You and me both.
Yeah. So,
But looking at it,
no, it didn't cost you a PTO day. You worked Friday. It cost you a day off.
It cost me a day off. Yeah. But to me, looking at it, Lenardi all the way up, even through the A&M game, had the two teams that were going to be out was going to be Carolina and Texas. But then when Texas did end up winning in double overtime and then they hung with Tennessee – enough to where they felt it was a good enough run where they felt like it was warranted to go from first four out to one of the teams in. But even Carolina and Texas were the two teams that were out even as they started their conference tournaments that were able to turn it enough to get in. And the ironic thing of all this too, Jeremy, I think both of them can win their first game.
Yeah, It wouldn't surprise me. I would probably agree with you. Because I think North Carolina is going to beat San Diego State.
I do, too.
Although I kind of think that they're pretty good. Texas Xavier's sneaky good matchup.
Yep.
Like, that's a really fun game to be a first four game. Let's talk about our favorite matchups, the difficulty of these regions, some of the storylines that are out there. The committee says that they never do storylines, which is, I think, a bold-faced lie. 713-780-ESPN. Busy show. Reed Geddes, the all-time assist leader in Houston Cougar basketball history, will be joining us later to get his thoughts on what he thinks of the bracket. Mailbag Monday. It is a Monday after all. There is a roster crunch dilemma when it comes to the Houston Astros, too, that I've started to notice. A bold take I have about Cam Smith. We'll get to the Rockets. We'll get to Derek Stingley as well. What are your thoughts on these brackets that were released yesterday? 713-780-ESPN, the HR&P listener line. Ron, YouTube at ESPN. I see Dre. Dre just walked into the door. Look, it's Dre. Dre, everybody. Give Dre a round of applause. Big applause for Dre. There we go. Two people clapping. That's awesome. There are three people. We got three. Joe, Blankers, you didn't even clap for Dre.
I know.
That's
him.
Your guy. Why didn't you clap for Dre?
He's fine.
Yay, Dre's here. All right, we'll get to Derek Stingley as well. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Cobos on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Cobos in Edo, presented by Corona Premier.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Yeah, we are at Cobos in Edo. Get on over here. Dre just came in here. If Dre doesn't excite you to come out to Cobos, I'm not sure what does. Although there was only two people clapping for him, though. That was kind of disappointing.
I told him I was never going to clap for him.
I don't know why. I don't know why you think
I know the guy. I don't know that he deserves a clap.
I know the guy, too. I clap for him.
I know, but I don't think he deserves to be clapped for just because he walked in. We didn't clap for Joe George when he walked in.
I wasn't here when he walked in.
Well, he walks out and walks in. I mean, I understand if you want to clap for Sam and her family, then you can do that. But, I mean, Joe George, you're going to clap for him?
Well, I didn't clap for him.
Okay, that's good.
I don't think anybody clapped for Joe, so I don't know how the point stands here.
Well,
Joe, did anybody clap for you? Did anybody clap for you when you walked in? See, he said no.
Joe, has anybody clapped for anybody all day when they walked in?
Dre.
See, so Dre. Jeremy clapped for Dre, and he's justifying it. I'm not clapping for Dre.
No, I'm not justifying it. I'm saying I'm surprised you didn't do it.
Oh, he owns the place. Raul owns the place. I'm not clapping for him either.
Well, he also didn't walk through while I was already here. I would clap for Raul as well. Plus, he needs a little sympathy with that arm that he hurt fighting off a bear. That's what he hurt it fighting off a bear.
Yeah, a teddy bear.
Yeah.
What he does for Houston is he fights off teddy bears.
He did it for the H.
Yeah.
Is what's happening. He broke his arm. Right, Raul. That's exactly right. Texture says, good to hear you guys on today. Oh, my goodness. Who let Paul get that drunk for a while? It was entertaining, but it went downhill, like, pretty quick.
Did
was
he? I know.
He seems sick.
So
did he have a couple pops?
We mentioned Raul, he's done two interviews on air today, one with John and Lance and one with Paul. He brought Paul, who said he wasn't drinking, an Irish car bomb and another drink and a beer. And he's like, and Paul was like, no, I'm not. And then he did. He's like, and I knew that because Raul doesn't really feel comfortable doing these interviews.
Yeah.
So he was trying to loosen Paul up, and he loosened them both up.
I thought Paul was sick too. So maybe there was a combination of a car bomb.
I thought
bomb
he was hurt because he was carrying that crooked ass cane that he said was his.
What did he say it was?
A shillelagh.
A shillelagh. Who else would? If I could, if I told you there's one ESPN host who carries a shillelagh, who would you pick?
It would be Paul.
Texter, nobody in the first four out and last four in deserve to be in, but bubble for a reason. Well, you have to get to 68, and if you're picking your most deserving 68, then, yeah, half of them do deserve to be in, half of them deserve to be out. Now, if you want to say that there's not, a national contender there, I would agree with you probably. Saints Patrick, my son was born the night Nova hit that buzzer beater, and I started yelling in the delivery room, wife not happy. I was at that game. That's one of the best finishes for a final ever.
Yep.
Ever. Jordan was in the building. He and I were hanging out that night. Corey, Houston has been absolutely amazing this year. As a Tech fan, I was upset they aren't healthy. They weren't healthy after Baylor and couldn't get to the finals against U of H. I feel like Tech should have been a 2 seed, and I feel like they have a shot. I do have U of H winning it all, though. I really like that Texas Tech team. If Darion Williams and Chance McMillan are healthy, I think they get to a regional final. Now, they have to beat St. John's. They'll have to beat St. John's in the Sweet 16 to get to the Elite Eight.
And I think that as good as St. John's has been and the great job that Patino has done, I think they're gettable. I think they're beatable. And I think that Texas Tech, I'm in total agreement with you. Unlike Iowa State, who's never going to be fully healthy now for the rest of the year, because I thought Iowa State and Texas Tech were kind of similar, that if they get their two guys that have been out back, no matter what they're seeded, they can do a whole hell of a lot of damage. And I still firmly believe that about Texas Tech, and they're very well coached, and I think that they could go a long way. Iowa State, on the other hand, because of missing one of their two best players, I think that hurts them immensely. But I think Texas Tech, no matter what, how much you put stock in and worry about where you've been ranked and what you should have been seeded, throw it all out the window and understand that's a team that could go very deep into this tournament.
I just hope McMillan's healthy Because if he's not, then I think that's a bit of a game changer. Like, I think they need both of those guys to be able to beat St. John's. Now, look, their second-round matchup is going to be tough, too. Missouri-Drake. Drake's a popular pick to beat Missouri. I like Missouri there. I think Missouri's a lot better than people are giving them credit
for.
Like, the SEC was really good this year. I'm not going to front. Usually I'm an SEC hater. I can be this year. They were unbelievable. They were really good. Everybody in the SEC was fantastic. They deserved, what was it, 13, 14 teams? I lost count. They deserved
14.
All of it.
I think it was 14.
The conference record in the NCAA tournament. Kansas-Arkansas is interesting. You got Bill Self and Calipari battling it out in the first round. Winner of that one probably gets Rick Pitino if he can avoid the upset of Omaha. I was listening to a lot of like bracketology coverage yesterday. Apparently, Coach Cal and Rick Pitino hate each other. Apparently, they loathe each other. So you get that matchup in the second round, that would be headline drama. All of the stuff I love in my sports.
See, I wonder that because they both coached at Kentucky. Was that the changing of the guard? Was that Pitino's old school and doesn't agree with how Coach Cal was all about the one and dones? But in that case, I'm with you. I want all that drama, all that smoke, and I would love to see that. And I think Bill Self is kind of that. I think he views Calipari as one like a guy that he's always constantly going to be competing with, like name recognition and career and things like that. I love that matchup, and I think that was one of the ones when the committee, whether they admit it or not, that they put there for television and hype purposes, and it's going to get all that and more.
Yeah, they say they avoid storylines. I don't believe it. But that's a sexy first-round matchup. I think the Midwest region is tough, like Brian was talking about. I think Gonzaga and 8C, when they're a KenPom number 9, I thought that they were underseeded. Georgia's very talented. Georgia probably deserved the 9 seed, but Georgia has wins over some, like, incredible – they beat Florida this year. Georgia has a win over Florida, who might be playing the best basketball in the entire country. They beat St. John's earlier this year. Georgia beat St. John's. I think it was in the Bahamas. They beat Kentucky. They beat Oklahoma. They beat Vanderbilt. They beat Texas, all those teams in the tournament. But if you have a win over Florida and St. John's, it shows how good you can be. It shows that you're capable of beating anybody in the country. And I think Gonzaga is that way as well. And then, like, not to go forward and all that stuff, but Purdue, if Purdue gets out of the first two rounds, they will play a regional in Indianapolis. That's a home game for Purdue. And Kentucky's the 3 seed there. That would be a home game for Kentucky, too. Kentucky's not far. Like, Lexington from Indianapolis is pretty dang close.
Yeah, that's dangerous simply because of the fact that sometimes I don't think the committee looks at it as deeply as they should. But, like, even my buddy's got tickets for the regional in Milwaukee. And he was talking about it. He was hoping to see the Cougs. But at the same time, I was like, oh, my God, like, you guys could be playing home games if they win their first two games. That Marquette could be a home team in Milwaukee and not be a 1 or a 2 seed. So I think that a lot of times the committee doesn't pay enough attention to that. Like, in close proximity, fan bases that travel, you know that could be a serious problem. We've had it happen in the past in the last couple of tournaments, and it could happen yet again.
3 hours is all it takes to drive from Lexington to Indianapolis.
Didn't the Cougs run into something like this?
Yeah, it was Auburn. It was Auburn and Birmingham in the second round 2 years ago, whenever Houston was the 1 seed. Now, Auburn this year has something similar. Auburn could play Louisville in round 2 in Lexington.
Oh.
Yeah. So Auburn got it a little bit
that's crazy this year
from the geography thing. Now, I think Auburn's loaded. In fact, did you watch the bracket release on CBS or did you wait till they came out?
I
was watching it live. The South region was the first region that they released because Auburn was the overall number 1 seed. Uh-huh. Whenever I saw Louisville as the 8 seed, I was like, wow, it's an underseed. As soon as I saw Louisville as an 8, I thought North Carolina was toast. Because ACC, the resumes are kind of similar. As soon as I saw Louisville underseeded as an 8, I thought North Carolina was out. And then just a few moments later, they announced them as one of the final 4 teams in. Like, it was kind of weird. Like, again, it didn't really add up whenever you look at it.
I think Auburn can be vulnerable. I think Auburn can be vulnerable.
How quick?
But I think...
To Louisville in round 2? Creighton in round 2? Or are you thinking more?
I think Creighton's going to give them some problems. But I think as you get inside of – I think they could win their first 2 games. And then I think that it could get even dicier for them. I don't think they're playing their best basketball. Obviously, Florida beat them in the SEC championship game. And I think as good as they've been, I think that they are vulnerable and they are one of those teams that could be on upset alert pretty quick.
They're pretty loaded, but I think they've lost 3 of their last 4 heading into the NCAA tournament. I think Louisville will give them, like, a game. I don't think they win it. I think they probably pulled away late. But I think Louisville is good enough to give them a game. Now, Michigan A&M, potentially in a Sweet 16, could be tough. As you look at the South region, A&M, of course, you could listen to all their NCAA tournament games here. Michigan State, I think, is being overlooked a little bit as a 2. Whenever I look at Duke's region, I don't see them having any trouble in the first two rounds. Mississippi State, Baylor, I think they handled them like so they can kind of ease Cooper Flagg back. Potential matchup with Arizona is interesting. I think my favorite first-round matchup, though, is BYU-VCU. Because BYU, high-powered offense. VCU, one of the better defenses in the country, kind of a contrast of styles, and styles make fights. I think that's going to be a really good game. The West region, I think, is pretty loaded. Like, Florida, I think, is playing the best basketball. Don't sleep in Maryland, the number four seed.
Maryland's very talented.
Really good. And then I like the bottom half of that bracket. I think St. John's could go to the Final Four. I think Texas Tech is capable of going to the Final Four. And then, obviously, I think the Midwest region is pretty stinking loaded.
I think if you get Wisconsin BYU in the second round, those are two kind of underrated but very, very talented teams. They play a little different in their style of play. I think BYU's got two really talented players.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, Tanjay from Wisconsin is a guy that's kind of improving his stock, like we talked about Uzan. He's improving his stock as the season goes along as a guy that could probably play on the next level. But I think that those are interesting.
And what do you think their ceiling is, Wisconsin?
Two games.
See, I think they can get to the Elite Eight.
They have the ability to do that, but come tournament time, for the most part, except for the 1 year when they should have won the national championship and lost a game they had won against Duke.
Yeah.
That they normally kind of underachieve after they get past the 32. But, look, Greg Gard, as much as I've been critical because he doesn't really recruit in the big cities in the Midwest, I think he's done an unbelievable job. His point guard from a year ago is just absolutely having a career year at Nebraska this year. And he still found a way to reload and win. He beat Michigan State, which has been a team that's been super hot in the semis of the Big Ten. So I think that they are capable. I just don't believe that they're going to go deep.
Tournament's fickle. I could see them like Grant Nelson for Alabama is banged up. Like his status in the tournament and how healthy he is in the tournament is up in the air. And Alabama's the 2 seed. So I could see Wisconsin like actually getting from that bottom half of the bracket to the Elite Eight to play Duke. But I could also see them losing in the second round to either BYU or VCU.
I think
VCU could beat them too.
Maybe.
I think either of those two teams could beat them. So like their run I think is going to be kind of interesting, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Cannot wait to get it all started. And of course, if you want to enter a free bracket, you can do it with us. ESPN 97.5's Bracket Madness back and brought to you by the Golden Nugget Lake Charles, East River 9, and the Two Creeks Crossing Resort as well. It's the time of year to test your knowledge against our listeners and all of us, the host, the talent, and then producers like Brian at ESPN 97.5 in our Bracket Challenge. You won't just be competing for a perfect bracket either. We'll have prizes from Two Creeks Crossing Resort, Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage, Gooder Sunglasses, Nico's True Lux, and much more. It's free to enter. You can win free prizes. You're kind of dumb if you don't enter. Go to ESPN975.com under the Promotions tab to sign up. Join the competition. Maybe you win some free gear because you're good with your brackets. You're good in March. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line. Derek Stingley has signed an extension, the richest corner in NFL history. What's up Nick Caserio's sleeve with this deal? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees live from Cobos on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 and HD, 97.9 HD2.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Cobos in Edo, presented by Corona Premier.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brandt.
Get on out here to Cobos. Today's broadcast presented by Corona Premier. You know your spot to watch the NCAA tournament?
Right, yeah.
Cobos. This is your spot to watch the tournament, beginning Thursday all the way into April. You're looking to watch some college basketball, you do it at Cobos. No better place to do it. 713-780-ESPN. Texter says it takes great guard play and veterans to win in the tournament. I don't disagree with that. I think you're right. Ocho, I think Gonzaga's more favorable matchup for U of H than Georgia. Georgia has length that can bother U of H. Their shortest starter is 6'5", and they're anchored by 6'11", Aza Newell. Aza Newell's a stud. I don't necessarily agree with you, Ocho. I really don't. I did a deep dive on both of those teams late last night.
Uh-huh.
I think they're both very, very good. They're both capable of going deep into the tournament. Georgia on any given night can be the best team in the country. On any given night.
I wasn't aware of that because they had fallen off quite a bit.
Yeah,
they've fallen off from where they used to be, and obviously Ant Edwards played there as well. But, yeah, I just – with all the teams in the SEC, I just didn't – I don't look at Georgia the same way as I look at a lot of teams at conference. But they've had a heck of a run, and if you've got NBA prospects, you got a chance.
If you can beat Florida – and, yes, they did it at home, but they beat St. John's on a neutral floor, yes, early in the year. But if you have wins over those two teams – on any given night, you could be the best team in the country.
You can. And here's the other thing. In all the things you were saying about the tournament, I think the other thing that matters is from a coaching perspective, having coaches that have been there and done that. They might not have won the national championship, but if they've been in big games and they've been in key games and they can set their team up with expectations towards the crowd, the officials, a lot of times these guys, and I've noticed this in the past and made mention of this, but you take these smaller schools that play in cracker boxes and small arenas, suddenly they're playing in football stadiums and they're playing in NBA basketball arenas, and they're playing in bigger venues. Depth perception is a factor. The crowd becomes a factor, and a lot of things that you can't prepare for if you're a first-time head coach, as well as the fact that I heard Pitino this morning talking about, like, we made halftime adjustments where we had never played man-to-man all season long, and we grabbed 10 chairs in the locker room at halftime and diagrammed how to play consistent man-to-man defense and won a game we shouldn't have won because we knew what we had to do at the half. Those are things that matter, and if you've got a coach that's been there before, I think it actually factors in.
Yeah, I think really good coaching does give you a huge advantage in the tournament as well, especially on that second day. Like whenever you're playing the second round with a day to prep, whenever you're looking at a Sweet 16, Elite 8, and you have a day to prep, I think it helps you even more there. Ocho, there are some great potential second round matchups in the West region, Florida versus UConn. That would be interesting.
That would be great.
Playing better than anybody, UConn back to back national champion. Memphis and Maryland. Now, Memphis being without their point guard is kind of a wild card there. I really like Derek Queen's game. Derek Queen's a stud. Missouri versus Texas Tech, that'd be fun second rounder. Kansas St. John's, that'd be good too. Absolutely love a healthy Texas Tech, and Memphis is talented enough to beat anybody. I'm telling you, that point guard play, though, gotta be looking at that injury. It's questionable.
Okay.
But there's some thought that first week may not be available. They just don't always play to their potential. I do think that Memphis is playing better than they have been in years past, despite not being as talented. I think it's reflective
in the fact that Penny's not on the hot seat for finally, after having all these big-time recruits that just played for themselves, didn't play team basketball, and they underachieved. This year, they're actually playing more team basketball and getting, and they look like they've got a chance to go further because of it. So credit there, and of course, obviously, with all, can you imagine if you're Bill Self and you have to get through Calipari and Pitino, and if you survive that? Like, that's a hell of an accomplishment all by itself.
Yeah, Kansas has a lot of doubters right now too.
They're talented, like, though.
They have some dudes, but they're not very deep. But maybe you don't have to be as deep in the tournament because the timeouts are a little bit longer, stuff like that. St. John's playing really well. Kansas was the preseason number one, and just like they haven't been great in Big 12 play.
Take everything I just said about Memphis and flip it for Kansas. Normally, Kansas plays very, very together basketball, and it's very structured. Mm-hmm. And this year, it seems like more than I've ever seen at Kansas before, it's guys playing for themselves a lot.
Yeah, but maybe they don't do that in the tournament. Because Hunter Dickinson, obviously, he hasn't been there forever, but he's been in college basketball forever. Really good player. They have DeJuan Harris was a national championship winning point guard. I'm a big fan of KJ Adams. I think he's a good player.
I think he's really good.
Yeah, I think he's just like one of those really good college dudes. We'll get to Derek Stingley in a moment. Now, though, we do have some breaking Texans news. They have signed a corner.
Saw that.
Ronald Darby is signing a 1-year, $2.5 million deal with the Houston Texans. So, not an offensive lineman. I don't think Darby can play on the offensive line, but you're looking at your third corner here.
Yep.
Darby last year, if you care about Pro Football Focus grades, was a 60.3, which isn't great, but it's not awful. Like, it's better than Jeff Okuda, right?
Right.
So this is probably your third corner. I don't know if he can play inside at all. I imagine he can, 5'11", 190. But I think this is corner number three.
I think it's corner number three, but the first thing I thought about was, well, this is better than the two guys you brought in at the start of camp last year to try and compete. But at the same time, I don't know how much left he's got left in the tank, because I think that he's got a ton of NFL experience, and so I think that really plays in his favor. But it all comes down to, can he still play? And in a system like this where maybe it's more inside and he's supposed to be staying with tight ends as opposed to guys on the outside where there's a ton of quickness to go deep, hopefully that he's better than what they've had and he gives them a little bit of an upgrade.
Yeah, he'll be entering his age 31 season, so he is a little bit on the older side, Ronald Darby. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to the Derek Stingley news, the big Texans news of the day. $30 million for Derek Stingley. He signs a $90 million 3-year extension with all but $1 million of it guaranteed. Kind of odd. But is Nick Caserio playing chess with this move? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees broadcasting live from Cobos in Edo on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Look, it's March. Spring is on the way. In fact, spring is here. How many of you were doing yard work yesterday? It means it's time for spring savings at Monument Chevrolet. Get over to the dealership 225 and Beltway 8. Check out their massive inventory. Massive inventory so big that it's like their own little town over there at Monument Chevrolet. And they're the dealer that you can trust. Transparent. Got to have that in a car dealer. No hassle pricing. I love that. And get your car shopping done fast. Employee pricing going on right now as well for their Silverado 1500. So if you've been in the market for a new truck, why don't you get a Silverado 1500 with their pricing? Monument Chevrolet has been serving the Houston area for 50 years. They've helped generations of families get into new vehicles, and they want to get you into a new vehicle today. And these families keep coming back because they trust the fine people at Monument Chevrolet. Family feel, friendly atmosphere, good people. The culture's fantastic. And their salesperson of the week this week is Luis, Spanish speaker. He has many years of experience, very knowledgeable about the entire car buying process, so he can guide you through the process of getting the right deal on the right vehicle. Bilingual, maybe English is your second language. Then Luis is the guy you need to talk to over at Monument Chevrolet. But it's good for everybody. Get a fair deal, a fast deal, easy deal, without wasting your time and aggravating stressful negotiations. We all hate that, right? Having to deal with the car guy? Well, you don't have to at Monument Chevrolet. No tricks, no time wasting, no hidden charges. If you've been waiting to upgrade your ride, now is the time to do it. Visit them online, monumentchevrolet.com, monumentchevrolet.com, or just go in person, 225 and Beltway 8 at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 and HD, 97.9 HD2.
You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Cobos in Edo, presented by Corona Premier.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Thank you to Cobos Corona Premier for having us out. If you're looking for a place to watch all the games, beginning tomorrow, first four games tomorrow, two on Wednesday. You get the full first-round treatment tomorrow and Friday. Cobos is the place to do it. So get out of here, have a good old time. Get out here today. We'll be here till 6, St. Patrick's Day, for goodness sakes. Blankers is wearing his green. I'm wearing possible green.
It's yellow.
I think it's more yellow. Yeah, I think you're right. If you look at it right.
There are green ones almost green on the tables.
Oh, are there? Yeah, I'm too lazy. It's way over there. Like, it's too far. It's 20 feet away, Blankers. I mean, you expect me to get up 20 feet away for this fake necklace?
Well, I mean, if it avoids you from getting pinched a couple more times.
Yeah. I did get pinched earlier.
That's what I'm saying.
Still a little bitter about that, actually. Not a huge fan of that. Derek Stingley signs a contract extension, $90 million, 30 per year, three-year extension. Nick Caserio playing chess potentially here?
Yeah, the way I was looking at this, and maybe the money is just it's a little bit too big of a bump from Horn Jr. signed an extension at 25 a year. But you think about this, and what I always have been referring to in terms of like trying to save money is what Dallas has failed to do with multiple contracts now, which is they continue to think that they end up playing checkers. They keep screwing around. They keep hoping that someone's going to give them a discount or something's going to change, and then they have to overpay at the market price for Dak Prescott, for C.D. Lamb. Now they're going to face that with Micah Parsons. And the fact that they continue to let Micah Parsons dangle out there when you've got Myles Garrett and other guys signing for more and more money, it seems like with every passing day, the price is going to go up. We knew that Sauce Gardner is another guy that's going to be on the radar, and that whoever signs first is going to be the benchmark for getting more for whoever is yet to sign. I think to a certain degree, I give Nick Caserio some credit, because we've always talked about, hey, no matter what they're doing now, that they're going to face a time when they have to sign CJ, and they have to sign Will, and they've got to sign Sting. And now you get Sting taken care of and out of the way while CJ's still on his rookie contract, and you get that started. I thought it was actually a fairly good move. It's a little bit more money than I expected, but I don't mind it.
Yeah, the $5 million gap there seems outrageous. The $89 million guaranteed is weird.
Yeah, why? What's with the extra mil?
People are saying that they wanted, maybe not the Texans per se, but the idea there is they don't want a fully guaranteed contract to a corner. Like, I mean, it seems like semantics to me. Yeah. Like, it's kind of weird, but whatever. It seems like a great gap there, but I really like two things here. The first thing is I believe Nick Caserio does a good job of extending good players early that they're going to keep anyways, and you alluded to this with Dallas, where they kind of like hang on. Or I know Brian mentioned this in the rundown. I might get to it later, like kind of what Cincinnati did, where they let Chase hang on to right until the final year of his deal. They franchise tagged T. Higgins not once but twice. They signed him today. And that cost them money in the grand scheme of it. It cost them money when you take a 20,000 feet view of it. So whenever you look back at, like, Nick Caserio, whenever he signed Nico Collins, like, he did it early to the extent of, like, oh, is this too early? But then a year later, it's like, wow, Nico Collins' contract is a huge bargain. Now, Nico wasn't top wide receiver money like Derek Stingley's top wide corner money. But are you going to sign Derek Stingley in a year? Are you going to sign him in 2 years when his fifth-year option is up? Are you going to have to do the whole franchise tag thing if he doesn't sign a contract that you want him to? And then you all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, maybe a little bit of disdain between you and the agent, which his agent's David Mulligetta, by the way, which is also the same agent as C.J. Stroud. So kind of like they seem to have a pretty good working relationship. But I like that he does it early. The other part of this, too, is it looks like they're baking in the final year of his rookie deal, the fourth year, the fifth-year team option into this bigger deal. So where it looks like a three-year, $90 million extension, because I also saw people thought it was too short. But by baking it into the final year, his fourth year, the fifth-year rookie option, now 3 more years on top of that, that means he signed for five more seasons.
Years, yeah.
He signed for 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. On top of that, whenever you bake it into the rookie deal and you bake it into that fifth-year rookie option, and Texans Cat deserves the credit here. He's the one who tweeted this out. The paper value of Derek Stingley's contract is 5 years, $113 million, which means the APY is about $22.5 million. So while the extension is bigger than any corner in NFL history, Derek Stingley's going to have an APY of 22.5, and that's not top corner money. So this Nick Caserio's got a good capologist.
Yeah, this is, whether it's Nick himself or Nick and his staff, but this is the chess factor. This is where you're playing smart, where we always talk about, hey, the difference between signing Noah Brown and never using him, you know, and it's a couple million dollars you threw away. But on the grand scheme of things, this is a lot more money. And if you end up that your AAV over the course of the next 5 years is in the 22 range as opposed to the 30 range, how it looks when you look at it just from, you know, the first glance, you should realize that that's a pretty good significant savings. The corner market's going to continue to go up. I just don't think that Sauce Gardner's going to have that kind of a deal. He's probably going to get top dollar across the board. And so I give Nick actually credit for doing this, doing it now, and doing it the way that he did it with those extra years at the end.
I haven't really seen any criticism to this. And look, there are times whenever I can see some criticism in a deal, like maybe you can throw the injury concerns out there. But even if Stingley were to get – look, let me knock on wood. But if Derek – let's say you don't do this deal. Derek Stingley has an injury this season. Are you still not paying Derek Stingley? Like, unless he has a Tank Dell type of, you know, triple knee ligament, like, injury, even if Derek Stingley tore his ACL, I still think he's going to get this type of deal. So I don't really see any negative to this contract at all. I see zero negative to this contract.
No, see, I think that's the biggest thing. The biggest thing is that aside from an in-game injury, which you can never predict and you just have to go with, there was no doubt in anybody's mind that not only was he the best corner on your roster, he was one of the best, if not the best corner in the league. So you know already that he ain't going anywhere. When we talk about those key core guys that make up this team and what it's going to do for the next several years, he's one of those guys. CJ's one of those guys. Will Anderson's one of those guys. He's one of those guys. And so you know that there was no, like, a guy that's on the bubble where you're going, hey, maybe for a little less money or maybe if we can meet somewhere in the middle. This was pretty much a given. He was going to be back anyway, so you took care of it ahead of time. You actually did it in a very savvy way to save some money along the way. And you got to believe he's got to be happy, too, knowing that this is something he doesn't have to worry about.
Yeah, long term, this is going to be a kind of a team-friendly deal. Like, you're going to pay more this year and next year than what you would have. But those 3 years to the extension that you added, I think it's very sure. Again, I don't see a negative. There's a negative out there, 713-780-ESPN. And I'm usually, well, I like to call myself a realist. I wouldn't call myself a pessimist. But some people might call me a pessimist, always looking at the negative, a negative Nancy, whatever you will. For someone who has that reputation, me, I don't see the downside of this at all. Like, zero downside. I'm a fan of it. Good move by Nick Caserio, much like it was for Nico Collins. And I saw downside of Nico Collins' extension. I thought it might have been a little too early. I'm an idiot. I shouldn't have thought that. But I saw the downside of that extension. I don't see the downside here. 713-780-ESPN if you see a little bit of downside.
I saw some people that didn't understand.
You did see it?
No, I saw a few people that said, aside from the actual money and the average annual value, they were assuming that $30 million starts this year.
Yeah.
And they were worried that they were going to be financially strapped now. And they couldn't do anything with free agency or otherwise to get offensive linemen.
I also saw some people say, why only 3 years? Mm-hmm. But whenever you still have the fourth year of his rookie deal, the fifth-year team option, then the extension, you're looking at keeping him for five more seasons too. Like this season and then four more. 713-780-ESPN. If you have any negative to the Stingley extension, I want to hear it. I really do. Also, the Rockets. How about the Rockets beating some bad teams? Good Jalen Green. Is he back? Is he on a heater? What's the deal there? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Cobos on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.